And now, a poem about Wisconsin's John Doe investigations.
Today we're podcasting on Doe.
You mean that Doe?
Well, yes and no.
It's John Doe 1?
No, that's old.
Then John Doe 2.
You're getting cold.
What can it be?
It's John Doe 3.
Well, this seems like a lot to me.
It is, but we will do our best.
Let's put this corny poem to rest.
This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Laurel White.
And I'm Sean Johnson. Let's talk about the investigation into the investigation known as John Doe.
Doe, a deer, a female deer. Ray, a drop of golden sun. Me, a name I call myself. Far, a long, long way to run.
Before we get started, a quick note that John K. Wilson, our resident politics nerd, is out this week. Also, a preemptive note, this politics podcast is going to go deep into the weeds, into the history of John Doe's in Wisconsin, but we are going to get to the news of the week. An investigation into the John Doe by Attorney General Brad Schimmel calls for the administrators of the Ethics and Elections Commissions to resign. All that is coming up.
I call myself a long, long way to run.
That was the great Julie Andrews from The Sound of Music with her famous Do, Re, Mi.
A different Doe.
Was she talking about the John Doe law in Wisconsin?
So many Does.
Yeah, probably
so many
not.
Does indeed. Probably yeah. Not. Before we get into like this latest iteration of the John Doe universe, can you remind us like what the original John Doe was and when that happened? Because this was like this was pre Laurel White. This was PLW. I don't know, at WPR. So
yeah, it goes back quite a ways, mm-hmm. Laurel White. And boy, if I'd known you were going to ask me that first question, I probably would have done a little more research.
Oh, but you were here. You remember.
I was like, here. Well, it started when Scott Walker was county executive Scott Walker, and he was running for governor.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know it went back that far.
It went back a ways.
Okay.
And I believe it was county executive Scott Walker who reached out to Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm and said, we have some funds that were embezzled here, some veterans funds. Can you look into it?
Okay.
And
can you remind me what it means to embezzle?
You're stealing, you know, like okay. So somebody using their position to steal money that was supposed to go somewhere else, in this
okay.
case to a veterans fund.
And who did Walker think was embezzling from the veterans fund?
They didn't know. And it wasn't Walker specifically. I think it was his chief of staff
okay.
that reached out. And so that Doe, though.
That Doe.
I'm not purposely rhyming here. It's hard to stop once you start there. And Doe rhymes with so many things.
It does.
But, although. but that did lead, that investigation led to many charges, including
okay.
against Governor Scott Walker's longtime political advisor before he was governor, when he was county executive, and before then, when he was running for state assembly, I believe, Tim Russell. Who was found guilty of embezzling funds that was supposed to go to this veterans charity.
Wow, okay.
He wasn't the only one, but it was, you know, Russell was a big figure in that. So it's not like these cases have always been, the John Doe has always been this amorphous, you know, meandering, wandering into uncharted areas of law. It was pretty concrete in that first one.
Yeah.
But John Doe 1 beget John Doe 2. And that one got a little bit more, it got bigger, and it took on a lot more.
So John Doe 1 is the one you just talked about.
Yes.
John Doe 2 is the one that I'm more familiar with, and that's the one that looked into coordination between Walker's campaign
yes.
and outside political groups.
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay.
And
that got that's not the one. That's the two.
Who's on first?
Right, sorry.
Yeah. Yes, that is John Doe 2.
Okay.
And the reason we're talking about this now is because, well, we talked about that case a lot when The Guardian published a lot of documents that were part of the John Doe 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the John Doe investigations in Wisconsin, they're supposed to be private. And The Guardian got a hold of all these documents, published them all online, and you saw some interesting stuff in there. Actually, we did our first, like, live podcast about that Guardian article, I think.
Our very first podcast?
I believe it was, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I don't want to go back and listen to that. That's sort of like...
We were still getting our sea legs, guys. Right. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. But we kind of knew what was going on in the John Doe at that point. A lot of it had come out through other leaks at that point. Mm-hmm. But the Guardian put it all out there, the documents, you know.
It was 1,500 pages of documents.
There was a check there that led to the title of the Guardian article. It was a big check to a conservative group, and the memo was because Scott Walker asked.
Mm-hmm. So that's implying that, like, Scott Walker is asking for money for an outside group, which would have, at the time, been illegal.
In fact, you can go back and look at Supreme Court justices from the state Supreme Court saying, in Wisconsin, coordination is illegal. Like, that idea was not just this, it was not a fairy tale. It was something that was definitely out there. But now it seems like when we talk about John Doe 2, a lot of critics of that investigation talk about it as though there was never any basis at all for that investigation.
There was no legal argument.
I would argue that it's a little bit more gray, that perhaps if it had gone up to the U.S. Supreme Court and, you know, challenged on that point alone, you don't know what they would have said. But
And people tried to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court declined.
It was ultimately decided in the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court said, in an opinion written by Michael Gableman, one of the court's conservatives who is retiring, not a direct quote, but something along the lines of, let me be clear, the John Doe is done. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he said John Doe is dead, but to that effect, he did, you know?
Yeah.
And we're starting from the very beginning here to quote Julie Andrews.
This is my inclination when we do podcasts on complicated things is to like start from the beginning. And hopefully people are like, oh, my gosh, why are we talking about things that happened like a decade ago? But
we're going to get to this new stuff here shortly.
We will. There are nerds out there like me that want like the ridiculously huge backstory. And if they're not familiar with it, you know, that's really helpful. But even if they are, maybe like this is consider this your refresher.
There you go. Yeah.
So Gableman's decision, the Supreme Court case on John Doe, he mm-hmm. says John Doe is done.
Okay. And so then the legislature follows suit, mm-hmm. codifies the Gableman decision, goes a little bit farther, makes it clear that coordination in Wisconsin between third party groups and candidates is okay. They take the agency that investigated, that it was involved in this investigation, the Government Accountability Board, and they disband it.
Yeah.
They end the GAB.
Now, pause here, because this is a question that I have. To what extent was the GAB, the Government Accountability Board, involved in John Doe 2? Like, they're so tied to it now, and this is really relevant for the stuff that I'm going to talk about later. But, like, who ran the John Doe? That was John Chisholm, right? The Milwaukee County DA?
No, he handed off John Doe 2.
Okay.
But it was kind of a partnership between Columbia County, Dane County, Dodge County, Iowa County, and Milwaukee County.
Okay.
And some of those counties, the DAs eventually jumped off and said, like, you know, we don't want anything to do with this. But initially, it was five counties in partnership with the Government Accountability Board.
And why the Government Accountability Board?
I mean, they were the state's elections agency and the ethics agency. And, you know, their view of campaign finance was that you could not coordinate. If you were a candidate, you could not mm-hmm. directly coordinate with a group like the Wisconsin Club for Growth. Mm-hmm. You could not solicit donations on their behalf. You couldn't plan media strategy. You know, they had a pretty hands-off view of that.
So the GAB thought there was a case, and they partnered with a variety of district attorneys from around the state to lead this John Doe 2 probe.
With the special prosecutor, Francis Schmitz.
Okay.
He was kind of driving things.
Okay.
But always, you know, he's consulting with the GAB as they went along. So back to the GAB. The mm-hmm. legislature disbands it and says, instead of the Government Accountability Board, we're going to have an ethics commission, and we're going to have an elections commission.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And instead of, you know, a bunch of former judges, we'll have it's more of a mix of partisan choices, partisan
right.
appointees.
They're
to these
calling
boards.
It a bipartisan commission now, each yeah. commission versus a nonpartisan commission.
That kind of brings us up to where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
The law on coordination was changed. The Government Accountability Board was disbanded. Mm-hmm. In fact, the John Doe law was restricted They can't use John Doe investigations anymore to investigate political corruption. You know, they would have to use a different tool for that, a grand jury potentially, mm-hmm. or, you know, they just have to go a different route. So a lot of changes were made, but definitely some for conservatives, some lingering, I guess, unfinished business for them.
I mean, they think it was partisan, right? Like they think the Government Accountability Board, because it had this position about outside fundraising and coordination, that they were sort of out to get the governor, right?
You could also make the argument, as you know, some backers of the board have, mm-hmm. that, you know, the people that served on that board were not beholden to the majority party. And, you know, the majority party typically doesn't like that. You know, they want their people in important places like this, and they didn't have that with the GAB. And then as the Ethics and Elections Commissions were spawned, mm-hmm. I mean, some of the same people from the GAB end up working in important positions in the Elections Commission. For example, Mike Haas was the elections administrator in the GAB. Mm-hmm. He is now the administrator for the Elections Commission. So remember that name, Mike Haas, because we're going to have to get back to that, because mm-hmm. that's where the story gets a little more current. So we got about 20 minutes in, and now we're going to talk about the news of the week, guys.
Yeah.
So what happened recently is...
It was last week, I think.
So, you know, back to that Guardian thing. There were a lot of people saying, like, wow, the Guardians, you know, Democrats would look at that and they're like, hey, this is, you know, this is like a smoking gun. This shows some serious corruption. Mm-hmm. Republicans looked at that Guardian thing and said, hey, we got to investigate who leaked this. You know, they're breaking the law.
Right, because John Doe documents are supposed to be secret.
They are.
And this whole thing has already been decided. So, you know, this whole thing is just like airing out documents that are by law supposed to be secret and mm-hmm. bringing up things that tarnish Republicans, make them look bad.
So Brad Schimmel leads an investigation into mm-hmm. what happened with those Guardian documents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are now. So what happened there?
So Schimmel issued this report on where the leak came from. That came out last week. And essentially what he said was security was lax at the GAB and implied that because of that lax security, the leak happened.
And also in that report said like that the investigation or people who had access mm-hmm. to the John Doe material, it was expanded so many times mm-hmm. that they don't even have a comprehensive list of everybody who had legal access to these documents, was my understanding from that report. Like it just kept growing and they don't even know how.
Right. I mean, I think that's like the more detailed explanation of him saying security wasn't good on the documents.
Yeah,
like they
yeah.
can't even point to who had access to what and what they had and
yeah.
et cetera.
So that's the answer, right? Why was this stuff leaked? The Attorney General says,
we
don't know. They're not happy with the way that the Government Accountability Board handled these records.
Right.
And they were supposed to, under court order, get rid of them, right?
Yeah. And yeah, they were supposed to turn them all over.
To the state Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And they did not.
Yeah, there were some boxes that were uncovered in the basement of the former GAB.
What happened then? You know, the Attorney General does this report. It's 92 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very critical of the Government Accountability Board, you know,
mm-hmm.
extremely critical.
Doesn't name a person in particular. There are no criminal charges.
I mean, it names people, but you're right.
But not for criminal charges.
That's
It didn't name somebody that said, like, this is the person that gave the documents to the Guardian. They didn't get to that point.
They never did.
But they got to the point where they said, here are 9 individuals that we think were in contempt of court just because of the general handling of these documents.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, you mentioned Francis Schmitz.
Yes, he was on that list.
Mm-hmm. And then...
Shane Falk is somebody that they really, you know, mm-hmm. singled out in their report.
He was a lawyer with the...
Oh, he was with the Government Accountability Board.
Yeah, with the Government Accountability Board.
Back when, you know, back before the Government Accountability Board existed, he used to be a Democratic appointee to the previous elections board.
Oh, geez. That's too far. Even for me, that's too far back.
No, but in the world of politics, right,
yeah.
his Democratic leanings were uh-huh. not a secret.
Right. They were well known.
He had been a Democrat in the past. Like his actions had been very publicly a Democratic appointee.
Sure.
And then he worked for this nonpartisan board And some of the emails that came out, he was really, really pushing Schmitz to be more aggressive. Like, he felt like, we have a case here. You need to be not so wishy-washy in the media. And he was pretty outspoken, and probably why he's like number one on that list of people who should be reprimanded in the DOJ report. They really go after him.
Didn't they even call the boxes that were discovered in the basement that hadn't been turned over? Didn't they call them the Falk files or something?
They said something like
their,
that
in
yeah.
the report. So he was very tied personally to things in this report.
But again, no criminal charges here.
Right.
They did not say Shane Falk leaked it. You know, they didn't say that about anybody.
And this is where it gets very, very current. Up until like moments before we were recording this podcast, Mike Haas,
yes.
who we talked about a couple minutes ago, who is the administrator of the current Elections Commission.
And Brian Bell, right?
Who is the administrator of the Ethics Commission.
And whose ties to the John Doe are not as direct as Haas. Like, Haas was part of the GAB. He was the elections guy at the GAB when all this was happening. Haas, by the way, also has a history of being a Democrat. Like, before, you would not know when you interview Mike Haas now that he had a career in partisan politics, because he did. But now you talk to him, you are hard pressed sometimes to get a quote out of Mike Haas, because he's treading pretty carefully, kind of walking on eggshells and not wanting to say anything that's a little bit spicy.
Right. He's not identifying as
eggshells,
as a
spicy, you know. Does that mix?
I don't think so. It works.
Spicy eggs.
Spicy eggs.
It's like a deviled egg.
Yeah, it's like eggs with like hot sauce or something. That's delicious. I would highly recommend. Also with some feta. I'm hungry. Mike Haas is definitely functioning right now like as a nonpartisan individual, even though he has that in his past, and that's something that people know.
Yeah.
People in state government know that. Now, Brian Bell, who's the administrator of the Ethics Commission, did we say about Fitz and Voss? So
I don't think we got there.
Think we got there. Okay. So, guys, there's so much going on.
Thursday night, Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald put out a joint letter. And what did that say?
Well, it called for Mike Haas and Brian Bell both to resign as the heads of the Elections and Ethics Commissions, respectively.
And this was interesting because, like a week earlier, Senator Steve Noss, who is often, we have discussed, often at odds with Republican leadership, especially Voss, Noss had come out and said they got to resign. You know, clean house, we're done with them. And on some issues, Steve Noss is kind of a voice in the wilderness. On this one, leadership picked it up and they followed his lead, and they're saying they need to go.
Everybody that was involved with the GAB needs to out of those commissions. Now, where does Brian Bell come into this? Because Brian Bell didn't work at the GAB. So why is he getting same treatment as Mike Haas?
It's less clear.
Yeah.
It's less clear. But if those guys go, then new people would fill their place.
And how is the administrator chosen for these ethics and elections commissions? So lawmakers and the governor appoint the board members.
Yeah, and those administrators serve at the discretion of that board.
Right.
So in theory, as long as those boards support these people, they will stay there. And so far, every indication is the boards, who are mixed of between Republicans and Democrats, support these people. But when the speaker and the majority leader start calling for resignations, does that change minds on the board?
Yeah.
You know, or do they start looking at things differently? If the majority leader starts talking about, well, you know, we haven't confirmed Mike Haas yet, you know, what does that do to the equation?
I think what's so interesting about this is the history. There is so much history to John Doe 1, John Doe 2. Did we actually, I don't think we talked, and I hate to open up this can of worms, but did we talk about John Doe 3?
Well, we probably should.
Yeah, I think we should mention before we wrap up, like, what's John Doe 3 and what does it have to do with all this?
So John Doe 3 exists only in this report by the Attorney General. Okay, it's not technically a new John Doe. I think he described it as a term of art. He's saying that this John Doe was expanded more than it should have been, that they were using the powers of the John Doe to seize more information that wasn't necessarily, he thought, connected to this investigation. And that's a lot of what's come out since this Attorney General report has been out there. Leah Vukmir has been actually very happy to talk about this. Like, this rogue agency took my personal emails. And what I'm a little unclear on is personal emails do get seized as part of investigations all mm-hmm. the time. And, you know, I don't know what the appropriate step is for an investigator with when they get those.
You know?
Like we didn't know they were out there. They weren't, it's not like they were publicized until this report came out. So yes, they were seized, but what's the appropriate step then for an investigator to deal with those?
Right. I mean, so you talked to Attorney General Brad Schimmel this week, and he said that he thought those documents that weren't directly related to John Doe 2 should have been just discarded. Like maybe they were gathered in the process of doing the John Doe 2 investigation. That happens a lot. Investigators kind of cast a wide net and bring a lot of stuff in that might not be related. But he said, you know, if it's not related, you should get rid of it. But that might not be how everybody feels. I mean, I know I have never run a John Doe investigation.
No.
Confession. But I have done like investigative journalism projects where you get a lot of information, right? And sometimes you don't need some of it and you don't throw it away.
Yeah.
Because you never know really what you're going to need. And so I think maybe that's that tension there is where the disagreement might lie with these John Doe 3 documents.
I'm hung up on this because, of course, everybody can relate to this thought of like these investigators taking your personal stuff without you knowing.
And like, how violating that would feel.
Of course you'd be mad about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't. It's an investigation. And you go back to John Doe 1, which we started with, they seized some personal communications in that that had nothing to do with embezzling veterans funds and that led to somebody being arrested for trying to entice a young boy into a van with pornography. Okay?
How is that okay then?
That's not okay. But they found out about that through personal emails, right?
Or personal communications. I'm not saying the enticing was okay, but how is it okay to have like to charge someone with something that's so unrelated to the investigation that you set out to do?
It's, well, they're investigators and they're like, once they have information that they can see like, hey, we discovered this wrongdoing, they can pursue it,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially through the power of the John Doe, which was used to be very broad. Like, okay, they would take it where it led them.
Yeah.
So I just don't know like where that line is, because of course people don't want their personal stuff out there. But where did an investigator go wrong by having it, you know, when you're grabbing this stuff?
Oh, and we should mention, too, that those personal emails, like Leah Vukmir's personal emails with her daughter, were in a folder that was labeled opposition research.
Yeah, let's get into that, because that's something that people maybe have been hearing a lot about.
Mm-hmm. And so, this opposition research folder was in one of the boxes that hadn't been turned over.
Yeah, so
that was in the GAB, the former GAB basement, right?
And that's one where conservatives are like, confirms our worst fears, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this agency was just working for Democrats. But you were at the Elections Commission meeting where they talked about this.
Mm-hmm. Mike Haas talked about this, and he said that there was that folder. It was called Opposition Research, but it was part of the documents that were seized in the John Doe investigation, and it was called Opposition Research when it was seized. The GAB didn't name it that. It didn't compile it. It didn't make the folder called Opposition Research. It just had it in its possession. The GAB had it in its possession because it was part of the investigation. So he's saying, like, we didn't create an opposition research folder at the GAB that had Republicans' personal emails in it. It was just part of the evidence we collected. And the other thing that Haas said that I think might be interesting for people to know is he said, we told the Department of Justice and the Attorney General that when they were interviewing us, when they were writing this report that came out, and they chose not to include our explanation about the opposition research folder in their report for some reason.
All right. The most fun part of this podcast, Laurel, was listening to Julie Andrews. And
Can we bring Julie back?
I think we will. Laurel White is WPR's Capitol reporter.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol bureau chief.
And John K. Wilson, our resident politics nerd, will be back next week.
So do la fa mi do re. Can you do that? So do la fa mi do re.
not just doe, there's more you can know if you subscribe for new episodes of the podcast on iTunes. You can also rate and review the show there. It's available on Google Play and most podcatching apps. And all of our past episodes are available at WPR.org/politics.
When you know the notes to sing, you can sing most days.